It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer. Can't we explore the next generation of golf course owners? An 18-hole executive golf course in rural Sheboygan County has changed hands. It's one of more than a dozen in or around Sheboygan, and the new owner plans to make his course more appealing to Gen Z golfers like himself. Join in on what it will take to attract a new generation to the golfing world. 800-642-1234. Tyler Lidke owns Sir Lancer Lot Golf Course near Plymouth. He's rebranding the course under its former name, Crystal Lake Golf Course. Tyler, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Good morning. So the story goes, you were a UW Whitewater student when you told a friend you wanted to buy this golf course near your hometown. And then recently, the course's longtime owner puts it up for sale. Can you pick up the story from here? What happened?
Yeah, it was a local course. I'm from the area. I've been familiar with it, golfed it as a kid and really enjoyed it. So jokingly, you know, had made this comment in college that, wow, wouldn't it be awesome to give this a shot? You know, kind of joking around about it. And sure enough, what was it? About a year later, it was for sale and couldn't pass up the opportunity to give it a shot.
So do you play, or is this purely a kind of investment for you?
It's a little bit of both. I get the question often.
Yeah, I'm sure.
The response I usually give is, I play, but not well. So, you know, it's a good excuse to practice.
Well, and you're trying to attract people who might not play well, but just want to enjoy the game and maybe not make it so competitive.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. You know, we find typically, you know, growing up and playing golf, I was always intimidated by some of the nice courses, the expensive courses, the areas that really good golfers are attracted to. So, you know, our goal and one of our, you know, driving factors is to try to make the course appealing for people of all skill levels, and not be super intimidating. Have it, you know, very friendly, family-oriented, easygoing environment.
What about the financials? Because between the purchase price, staffing costs, the overhead, the maintenance of a course, renovations, I mean, you've taken on a lot more risk than most 20-somethings, I would imagine. How do you feel about that risk?
You know, it's another frequent question, and I think I've answered it differently each time, but the gist of it is I enjoy the challenge. I think looking at it from different perspectives and finding solutions to those problems is something that you know, gets me going in the morning. And, you know, if we sit and we plan things correctly, I don't think we'll have any problems.
So I would imagine, too, you would have had to gone through quite a bit of planning with the bank. How did you convince the banks to say, you know what, believe me, let's get on board with this?
Yeah, absolutely. I had the opportunity to work with a local small town bank, Waldo State Bank, and they are, I can't give them enough praise. Tom and Jordan over there and the entire bank staff just have done a phenomenal job in helping us work through those numbers and even think of some of the things we may not have thought of coming into it. Problem solving future problems ahead of time was a key aspect to it. And you know, after we sat down and after a lot of meetings and running numbers, they were willing to give it a shot. And I can't be more appreciative and thankful for this opportunity that they provided to me.
We're talking with Tyler Lidke, who's the new owner of Sir Lancer Lot Golf Course, which is near Plymouth, 18-hole course. You can join in on golf courses of the future, what a new generation of golf course management might look like. 800-642-1234. Email ideas@wpr.org. So as you talk through the problem solving with the bank and what obstacles are out there, I would imagine that the fact that there are, what, more than 20 courses nearby, the competition is stiff, Tyler, for people's options. Does that worry you?
The competition is stiff. However, I think we have a great corner of the market. We've got phenomenal events that are scheduled to the rest of the year. We've got fantastic leagues, a great customer base, and we couldn't be more happy and excited to join them. They definitely drive this course and keep it up as to, you know, the condition and help us with ideas. And so I'm not, you know, we obviously want to bring new customers in, but I'm not necessarily concerned about the bigger courses, the more expensive courses, because going back to our discussion earlier, you know, we are looking forward to making that family friendly, that easygoing experience, which I think will speak for itself.
What goes into that easygoing, family friendly experience? Can you describe what that's like?
Well, I think, you know, going back, I'm not the expert golfer. So if I'm going to look at it from my own perspective, I'm definitely super comfortable going out on the course, chatting with people. You will see lots of non-expert golfers out here, and you will see some much better golfers. But there's a great mix of customers and people that find their way to the course. So meeting up with them and chatting with them, it's definitely less intimidating here, being a slightly smaller course, slightly cheaper course. And I think that those factors really play into making it a fun experience.
You're also going back to the original name of the golf course. Why do that?
Well,
you're not a knight of the round table, apparently.
I am not a knight of the round table. You are correct. This course is right next to Crystal Lake geographically. I mean, if you hit a ball the right way, you'll probably land in the lake. There's a great community right here. It's right next to Elkhart Lake. It's in Plymouth. And I think in terms of the name, it definitely fits well within the community that is right here at Crystal Lake. We've had lots of neighbors stop by and say, hey, and thank you. And they're very excited. So all those kind of factors went into wanting to bring it back to its original name.
How does a golf course be a good neighbor to the surrounding people and places and businesses and homes?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think, like I said, we've had a lot of neighbors stop in, a lot of people that live within walking distance, and the general consensus is let's work with them. They work with us. They want to bring events to us. We don't want to have any issues necessarily with our neighbors or rowdy golfers. So it's a balancing mix for sure. But overall, I think having that community aspect, hosting events, inviting them in, there is a great association here at the lake, the Crystal Lake Advancement Association, which most people on the lake are a part of. And we're looking forward to joining up with them and hosting future events, and making them a welcome part of this establishment, you know, to feel comfortable and be a part of it so that it can keep that community-oriented focus.
We're talking about the changing face of the golf industry with Tyler Lidke. He's a new course owner in rural Sheboygan County. Join in on the game, how it's changed, what you've seen happen to golf in the pandemic, what you want from a new era of golf courses. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're in conversation with a Gen Z golf course owner in rural Sheboygan County, how the sport and the industry is changing. According to research from the National Golf Foundation, 25 million Americans played on a golf course last year, and another 12 million people picked up a club in off-course ways, like at driving ranges, indoor golf simulators, putt-putt, like my family. Join in on golf where you see it headed in Wisconsin, 800-642-1234. Tyler Lidke is the new owner of a course near Plymouth and stays with us. Tyler, we've been talking about being a good neighbor to residents and businesses around the Crystal Lake area, Crystal Lake itself and that watershed. I want to know about your environmental ethic, because a study published last year in the journal Science of the Total Environment compared the care of golf courses to what happens in ag practices. And there are still more pesticides used on courses than on the fields that grow corn. And so what does sustainable management look like to you?
Yeah, absolutely. Great question. You know, being new, it's always a learning curve. And in full admission, I don't necessarily see quite as much of that as our superintendent does. But in the discussions that I've had and what I've learned, we do regular testing. Being so close to the waterways and the watershed, we do regular testing on site here, as well as one of our neighboring properties is actually a treatment facility. And we work hand in hand with them. It's been a long term. I'm going to call it a partnership because, you know, we are in communication so often. They do testing, and when they're seeing, if they were to find something or see something, it's a quick call. It's a quick communication between us, the superintendent, to say, you know, this is what we're seeing. We need to adjust this to prevent any potential harmful or negative side effects of the treatment of the golf course.
When you talk with your superintendent about the changes to turf management, what does that mean for a course like yours? How is the approach, the technology, and the use of fertilizer and pesticides and other inputs changing?
Well, I think, you know, as the world evolves and as we've got better means of testing, we are able to see and measure our inputs a lot better. We can do better soil tests. We can see the effects more from a data standpoint, as opposed to potentially, you know, 50, 60 years ago, it was more based on eye of the beholder type of scenario. So between doing regular testing, watching what's going on and sort of creating and implementing a plan, it definitely helps with keeping an eye on those types of potential issues before they become an issue.
Looking at the economic conditions again, as we are at this state in the pandemic, there being over 16,000 golf courses in America, and the National Golf Foundation, it tracks the closure data where we saw the peak of course closures in 2019, right before the pandemic, and closures have now fallen again. What does success look like for your golf course?
For us, I think it goes right back to creating that community atmosphere, the community environment. Like I mentioned, we have a lot of, I should say we've got quite a few fantastic leagues that come out almost nightly, Monday through Friday, and being able to work with them and talk with them, hear their thoughts, implement some of the changes they want to see. It's definitely going to be a driving factor in the success of this course.
Let's bring on a call now. Lindsay is joining us from Wauwatosa. Lindsay, hi, what's on your mind?
Hi. So whenever I think of golf courses, I just think about one time I saw like a little butterfly flying over a big area of turf grass. And so I always just hope that these golf courses would install some small like prairie gardens where they would focus on specifically plants that are native to our area to kind of make up for the natural habitat that is being taken away by the turf grass and the pesticides. So I was wondering if your guest had ever considered something like that.
Lindsay, thank you. Tyler, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, thanks, Lindsay, for the question or the comment, I should say. There's a lot of awesome opportunities within our course. We've been here officially, I think today is officially 2 months on the button. So going into next year, you know, we are looking to make and implement changes to, I'm going to call, beautify the course. We've done some new plantings around the buildings, some new flowers and whatnot. And I agree. I think there's a great opportunity to bring some of that natural habitat into areas, because not only is that going to create an awesome environment here on the course, but to your point, you know, it's going to bring in a lot of nature back to our course. And one point I do want to make is our course is quite wooded. It's not quite as open as you will see on many other courses. So we get lots of awesome wildlife. The golfers here love enjoying, or I should say they do enjoy seeing plenty of deer. They're always up around the clubhouse. So it creates an awesome very natural habitat and environment for people to sort of interact with and see grow and prosper.
Talking with Tyler Lidke, the new owner of a golf course near Plymouth, as we look at the future of golf course, the industry, and especially the courses around the Sheboygan area, their future. 800-642-1234 to join in. Tyler, what will winter bring for your golf course? Is there some type of off season that you have planned for your property?
That's a great question. It's a discussion we have almost daily. We have some plans and some exciting ideas to implement in the winter. We would like to keep the clubhouse open. We'd like to bring people in potentially for packer events or community building events. And I think it's going to be sort of a day-to-day, we'll call, decision as to what we might be able to implement or events we might be able to bring. But we are definitely looking for ideas. We've had lots of, like I said, the community involvement. They've had lots of ideas, whether it's dart tournaments or, like I said, the Packer parties. So sort of taking a mix of all of them and seeing what we can fit into the schedule and being flexible is going to be important on those decisions.
I've heard your family is pretty involved in running this course. Can you give us a little glimpse of that?
They are. It has been a lot of fun for everybody. My grandparents from all sides of the family have been out, whether it's cleaning up around the clubhouse, planting flowers, trimming trees. My parents did a fantastic job out here trimming some trees up around the clubhouse. It's a very fun opportunity for everyone to sort of be involved. And I think everyone's having a blast.
I would imagine, too, that labor is something that you really appreciate being a new business owner in this regard for this course.
Oh, absolutely. It's immeasurable the amount of help that they have provided.
And speaking of businesses, you have a photography business. I understand you run a screen printing shop, a farm. How do you have time to operate a golf course on top of all this?
Great question. Planning and scheduling is definitely helps me. The photography definitely started in high school as a hobby, and it remains sort of a hobby. It allows me to really be involved in the community yet. I volunteer with the high school. Especially football season, which we're right around the corner from. So I really enjoy that opportunity and being able to see everybody and work with the community from that aspect. And then, you know, my day job, my 9 to 5, we'll call it 8 to 4, is screen printing. So I work out of the Marshall Sign Building in Glenbeulah. And it's a partnership in the ownership, management, and operations of that screen print. And so it's a lot of fun.
Well, I'm wondering, what has been the best piece of advice so far that you've received about running a golf course? What advice have you really taken to heart?
Wow. We receive advice daily. but I think one thing that we've heard and that we're trying to implement is sort of listening to the community. And it's a discussion, I think, or part of the discussion we've had all day is, listen to the ideas. I mean, don't just write them off right away, but hear what people are thinking and see what we can do to work together with the community to make it that awesome environment for everybody.
As all of these ideas come into your course, how do you filter them? Who has a stake in deciding what you do?
Yeah, so I brought, like I said, my buddy from college. He is the manager, Jared. And so we like to sit down and have discussions about what's a good idea? What's the bad idea? What can we potentially afford to do, which is definitely something that we weigh in every decision, and what will help better the course for the long run.
Tyler, best of luck to you. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Tyler Lidke is the new owner of an 18-hole golf course near Plymouth. Ahead this hour, we find out who is eligible for student loan forgiveness under a federal waiver that's scheduled to sunset at the end of October. Join in on the Public Service Loan Forgiveness Program. Questions you have about it, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. News update is next. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We discuss a program intended to make it easier for public service workers to qualify for debt relief as the waiver is set to end in October. The Public Service Loan Forgiveness Program was created by Congress in 2007, meant to encourage students to pursue professions like teaching, like nursing, military service, and law enforcement. The U.S. Department of Education said last year that the program has spawned much confusion and frustration through time. Join in on having your debt forgiven, 800-642-1234. Emma Crawford is Director of Financial Wellness and Financial Aid Advising for the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. Emma, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Yes, thank you so much for having me. I'm super excited to be here this morning.
Well, this reputation of this program that it's complex, thorny, a real track record of high rejections. Can you explain what is the Public Service Loan Forgiveness Program?
Yes, yep, that's a great question. So a really straightforward definition is the basic premise is that after 10 years of a federal student loan borrower making qualifying payments, the remaining balance after those 120 monthly payments is forgiven tax-free. And in order to make one of those qualifying payments, they need to be working for a qualifying employer, which is usually a 501c3 employer. They also need to have the correct type of federal student loans, and they also need to be on a very specific repayment plan as well. So those requirements need to be met in order for that monthly payment to qualify. And after they make at least 120 of those, like I said, the remaining balance is forgiven tax-free.
You know, tens of thousands of borrowers have been able to get forgiveness, debt relief under this program. What have you heard about this program from the students you work with?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I think the most common thing that I hear from the students and the alumni I work with is that it's just really overwhelming. It's really difficult to stay on top of all of the different requirements. It can also be really difficult to reach the student loan servicers just because they are really overburdened right now as well. And so a lot of people really don't know how to start. And the rules and stipulations can be really confusing. And of course, that mixed with some of the bad press that this opportunity has gotten, I feel like a lot of folks are left feeling discouraged, unfortunately.
Perhaps not even wanting to try for the debt relief because there is that steep paperwork burden and borrowers still face, you know, all of these administrative things in order to get the application started. What paperwork should borrowers have in order to apply? What will they need at this point?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I think the most important paperwork that they're going to need is the Public Service Loan Forgiveness Form. And that can be accessed on studentaid.gov through their PSLF help tool. The purpose of that form is to help document their eligible employer history. So they can, you know, a borrower could potentially make 120 payments and then fill out that form and apply for forgiveness. But what I recommend to the students and the alumni I work with is to document their employer history along the way. So that way their loan servicer isn't stuck, you know, counting upwards of 100 payments at the end. So filling out that form at least once a year with their employer, and then anytime they leave an eligible employer and start a new job with another eligible employer, that's like the most important piece of paperwork. And then the second piece is if they are, they should be on an income-driven repayment plan if they are pursuing public service loan forgiveness. And anytime someone's on an income-driven repayment plan, every year they're going to be asked to recertify their income through an income-driven repayment plan certification form. So that's the other piece as well.
Deeply personal question. What about yourself? Are you eligible for this program?
Yes. Yep. So I do have student loans myself. So I, and that's actually how I got into this business and how I became so passionate about PSLF is that I had looked into it for myself at one point. And so because I do work at UW-Madison, I am technically a qualifying employee. So, or rather UW-Madison and the entire UW system for that matter is a qualifying employer. However, before this temporary waiver was announced, I actually was side hustling as a waitress here in Madison and was making aggressive payments on my student loans. So while I ultimately did not end up choosing to pursue this myself, I was at one point deeply considering it.
What is the difference between the traditional rules of this program and what is acceptable under this waiver period? Because only about 10,000 borrowers have successfully won the loan forgiveness under the traditional rules during the Biden administration compared to what's happening right now in this waiver.
Right. Yeah. And I really cannot emphasize this enough. The number, like the amount of loans that we're seeing being forgiven under this waiver is unprecedented. So under the typical rules of PSLF, slightly more than $1 billion of federal student loans have been discharged. But under this temporary waiver program, over $7 billion of student loans have been forgiven as of April 2022. So what the Biden administration has done is they've basically temporarily relaxed or temporarily waived a lot of the different requirements for PSLF. So for example, they can receive credits of or payment credit for payments that they made on ineligible loans, such as FFELP loans. So typically only direct loans are eligible for forgiveness under PSLF. And in order to make a qualifying payment, they do need to be on direct loans. But for a temporary amount of time, you can now get credit for past payments where you wouldn't have been able to do that before. So they've waived a lot of the requirements, and studentaid.gov has a wonderful PSLF page that has more information about the waiver as well. But I really cannot emphasize it enough that folks really need to look into this again.
What about Parent PLUS loans? Are they eligible for forgiveness under this relief program?
Wonderful question. Yeah, I get that question a lot. And they are only eligible if the borrower who took out the Parent PLUS loan for their student, if they also have their own federal student loans that they can then consolidate together. Oh. So it's a little bit of a loophole that exists. So just to reiterate, the Parent PLUS loan borrower would need to consolidate those Parent PLUS loans with their own federal student loans that they took out for their own program in order to convert that loan into a direct consolidation loan. So it's a little bit of a loophole, but unfortunately, if they just have Parent PLUS loans, they would not be eligible for this waiver.
And speaking of consolidations, if you have, if you consolidated loans with your spouse, can that work under the PSLF, the Public Service Loan Forgiveness Program?
So underneath the waiver, that's a really good question. And that's a really rare question that comes up. Unfortunately, those loans, I looked into this. I'm certainly not an expert on those loans because I'll be totally honest. I haven't worked with a ton of folks in that circumstance. But I remember looking this up for a person that asked that question in one of my webinars, and I found that it wasn't eligible for the waiver.
Okay.
But I do know that if you are someone who did consolidate your loans with your spouse, look on studentaid.gov. They have a ton of, they have more information on those consolidated loans with a spouse.
Talking about student loan forgiveness for public employees with Emma Crawford, Director of Financial Wellness and Financial Aid Advising for the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. Join in on your journey to getting your loans forgiven. What has it been like? What documentation has helped you along the way? 800-642-1234. Emma, who is not eligible for this program?
Yeah. So a really common question that comes up is whether or not someone with private loans is eligible. And unfortunately, private loans are not eligible for public service loan forgiveness. And there's no workaround with that. Those loans, it's impossible to consolidate private loans into a federal loan. So unfortunately, those with private loans would not be eligible. And then certain employees as well. So the biggest premise of this program, like you said at the start, is that you need to be working at a qualifying employer, which is typically a 501c3 organization, but not always. So more often than not, folks who are working in the for-profit industries are not usually qualifying for public service loan forgiveness. But if you're curious to see if your employer is eligible, the best thing that you can do is to go to studentaid.gov, use the PSLF help tool, and you can do a quick search for that when you're on studentaid.gov, get logged in, and then they have a wonderful employer lookup tool where you can enter in the employer's employer identification number, or EIN, or taxpayer ID, and it will tell you right away if it's ineligible, eligible, or if they need to do a little bit more research to see if it is indeed eligible.
Emma, do borrowers have any chance, any hope of completing this complex application process in just several months before the waiver sunsets?
Yes. Yeah. So in order to benefit from the waiver, you actually, I don't want to oversimplify because it will certainly take time and effort on behalf or on the borrower's behalf. But if you are someone that could benefit from this waiver, which is that temporary waiver of the traditional public service loan forgiveness rules and guidelines, the number one thing that you need to do is to get logged into studentaid.gov and review the types of outstanding federal loans you have. If you're someone that has federal Perkins or FEL loans, which is a little bit of an older type of loan, you absolutely need to consolidate those in order to convert them to a direct consolidation loan so that they're eligible for forgiveness. And then also making sure that you have certified the eligible periods of employment that you've held over the years. So there's enough time left to get this started, and I'm really trying to spread the word, and I really appreciate the opportunity to be here today to encourage folks to look into this again for themselves.
We heard from Peter in La Crosse, emailed us to say that they have much debt in Parent PLUS loans for their children's college education. And Peter wonders, is there any hope for Peter in this program? They taught for 30 years in a Catholic school, and they have a feeling that they're being shut out of this program. What do you think?
Yeah, that's a really great question. So since Peter is from La Crosse, there is a really great resource. If you look up Wisconsin Student Loan Debt Coalition, they do have a helpline for Wisconsin student loan borrowers. And so if you do have questions about Parent PLUS loans and how to best manage those and to look into what your options are, I really do recommend doing that quick Google search for the Wisconsin Student Debt Coalition, because they can help assist you through that. And that's what I hear from a lot of people, is that student loans they're having them is extremely helpful or extremely stressful, and getting and reaching out to resources can be really helpful in managing that debt and the stress that comes along with them. So I really recommend reaching out to that Wisconsin Student Loan Debt Coalition website and phone number.
Emma Crawford with us, heads of financial wellness and financial aid advising at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health, our guide discussing the Public Service Loan Forgiveness Program, PSLF. You might hear from time to time, join in on the work of canceling your debt, working for an approved employer, the process that you've gone through on debt relief, and questions about this program, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Tens of thousands of student loan borrowers have gotten relief through a debt forgiveness program for public service employees. As of June, the U.S. Department of Education says it approved $8 billion, but the waiver sunsets in October. Join in on your experience with the Public Service Loan Forgiveness Program, 800-642-1234. Emma Crawford is here, Director of Financial Wellness and Financial Aid Advising at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. Let's take a call. Etta is with us from La Crosse. Etta, hi, go ahead.
Hi. I worked for a qualifying agency for 14 years at one college and 2 years at another college and 2 years at another college. This, however, was before the program existed.
Before 2007.
Right.
Uh-huh. Go ahead.
So I am wondering if that service qualifies or not for this program.
Thank you, Etta. Emma, go ahead.
Yeah, great question. Unfortunately, no, that would not qualify. So the first eligible payment that someone could have potentially made was at the very start of the program in 2007. And so unfortunately, as of the rules, how they stand today, any payments made prior to the start of the program would not be eligible for forgiveness under PSLF.
What would happen if your PSLF application is denied? Can you challenge the decision?
Yes. So sometimes it is denied. And I think one of the biggest issues that I see in regards to if it is denied, it's usually due to an issue with how the form was filled out. So Fed Loan Servicing used to be the PSLF loan servicer, and now everything is being moved to MOHELA. And they're really strict with the type of signature on the form. So it's really important to get a wet ink signature on that. Other times they might just not have enough qualifying payments to qualify for forgiveness yet. And unfortunately, it is taking some time to get those eligible employment histories and eligible payments updated right now because of this huge shift from Fed Loan Servicing to MOHELA. But I think the best thing to do is to call either Fed Loan Servicing or MOHELA in that case to talk to someone to see why it was denied.
Let's bring in Lynn in Appleton with a question. Lynn, hi.
Hi. I've been working since I graduated in museums. In 2005 is when I graduated from grad school. And I lost my job. I was actually an archivist for a college, and the college closed during COVID. There was a brief stint of a few months where I drove for Amazon before I got a job at another museum. Would that disqualify me from applying for loan forgiveness?
Great question. Yeah. So it's okay if your qualifying employer history isn't consecutive. So it's totally fine to, you know, end a qualifying employer and then have a brief break for whatever reason, and then to restart at another qualifying employer. It's totally okay if those 120 payments are not made consecutively.
Lynn, does that make sense?
It does. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Emma, you know, you advise med students on their debt and their finances. That could be hundreds of thousands of dollars in debt. What is your best advice to them?
Yeah, that's a great question. I love my job. I love working with the students and the alumni I work with. And I think the best advice that me and my colleagues share with any student we're working with is to, you know, reach out for help if and when you need it, and to make a plan for your student loans. I think it can be really stressful and overwhelming to sit down and to look at the amount of debt that someone has taken out, especially if we're talking about grad and professional students who, you know, may have, you know, six figures of student loans, like you just said. So I totally don't blame them. It can be really difficult to sit down and to make a plan, but I think it is also the best thing you can do, because once someone has a plan, a lot of the stress and feelings of overwhelm do tend to dissipate, because they know that they're doing what they need to do in order to pay off their student loans, whether that's PSLF or another route. I think reaching out for help from your financial aid advising office and making a plan is the best thing that someone can do with student loans.
Especially if they just want to focus on learning medicine and everything else falls by the wayside because they are focusing on the next hurdle to get through their medical degree program.
Exactly. Yes. And that's why here at UW-SMPH, we do offer a personal finance elective to fourth year students in the spring of their last semester here called Physician Financial Wellness, where we do a really thorough deep dive into student loan repayment planning, among other financial wellness topics. Because it has to be the right education at the right time. And like you said, we want people to be able to focus on what they're here to do, which is study. And then when they graduate and go on to residency or a job or whatever that looks like, I think that's a perfect time to put a plan together.
Talking student loan forgiveness for public service employees with Emma Crawford, Director of Financial Wellness and Financial Aid Advising for UW School of Medicine and Public Health, fielding your questions about the program PSLF, the acronym there. You can join in 800-642-1234. Emma, you know, student loan repayment will restart for federal student loans at the start of September. Are graduates ready for this? How should students plan for the restart?
Yes. Yeah. And I think that there's been a ton of research and studies done just reaching out to loan borrowers. And one study that I read, survey rather, said that 50% of people are not ready for payments to start and interest to accrue. I am optimistic. Of course, I can't guarantee anything and I'm knocking on wood here, but I am optimistic that this payment and interest accrual pause will be extended. I'm anticipating an announcement any day now, hopefully, of course. But if as of today, like you said, it is, everything's set to restart in September. So the best thing that folks can do is to, definitely look into this temporary waiver, because this will expire after October. So I can't emphasize that enough, to do some digging on studentaid.gov. And just in general, to help prepare for payments to restart, I think it's a wonderful idea to get logged into your account on studentaid.gov, review your outstanding loans, double check to see who your servicer is, and get in contact with them to help put a good plan in place.
How did you use the payment pause on student loan repayments?
So like I said before, I was side hustling as a waitress to help make aggressive payments on my student loans. And once the freeze went into effect in March of 2020, I actually decided to stop paying them altogether, because my partner and I are getting married in September, and we bought a house as well. So we've had big other financial priorities and obligations that have come up. So we've really used this time to our advantage to focus on other financial priorities. And it really has been super helpful. Even the pause in interest alone is really, really helpful.
You mentioned the side hustle and serving, and some employees like teachers work outside, summer months. Would their payments while outside work, count toward the loan forgiveness program?
That's a great question. Yeah. So if you're a teacher, I know there can be a lot of, confusion in those summer months, whether or not that qualifies. And it really depends on your employer. So typically what I tell folks who are teachers, or if they're, a faculty member on a 9-month contract, it's a good idea to reach out to the human services or the human resources office, and, show them a copy of the PSLF form and ask or make sure that they're able to basically verify that you do work an average of at least, 32 hours a week or whatever their definition of full-time is, and that they can sign off on it. So many times teachers still are able to get credit for those months if they are on a 12-month contract, and their HR or supervisor or some representative from their school district can fill out that PSLF form.
Emma, thank you for joining us.
Yes, thank you so much for having me. And like I said, if you are out there and you're listening and you're stressed about student loans, please do look on studentaid.gov to see if you are eligible. With the Parent Plus loans too, like if you took out a Parent Plus loan and you are working at an eligible employer, you can get forgiveness through PSLF. There just might be pieces of the waiver that you're not eligible for, but please do look into it. And if you're listening from Wisconsin, check out the Wisconsin Student Loan Debt Coalition and reach out for assistance.
Emma Crawford, Director of Financial Wellness and Financial Aid Advising at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.